Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
It has been about 72 hours since we learned of the tragic death of Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gianna, seven others on that helicopter. The memorial's continuing through the night, through the world, and of course, here in Los Angeles. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside ESPN senior writer Zach Lowe, the man in the middle over there, and of course, Matt Barnes, one of Kobe's teammates, good friend, and of course, Paul Pierce, longtime rival and friend of Kobe Bryant. Thank you all for joining us today. Coming up, the Lakers are planning to speak with the media in moments, just the first time since Sunday's tragic events. We will take you there live as soon as they get to the podium. Today, though, I do want to start with Paul. We haven't gotten a chance to talk to you since the events of Sunday. I know you've been reeling just as the rest of us. How did you even find out what was going on Sunday?
I was sitting on the couch and just like every morning on a Sunday morning, just having breakfast. And a text comes across my phone and they was asking me, has something happened to Kobe? And like literally 30 seconds later, I get a call from Kevin Garnett. And so I'm like, you know, he calling me pretty early. He usually don't call me this early. And he called me and he was like, did you hear the news? And he was kind of breaking down and very hysterical, and then I just dropped. I remember dropping the phone, and it just, like, even right now, it doesn't even feel real. You know, a guy who motivated me, who brought the best out of me, you know, on and off the court. And I tell people to today, you know, there would be no Paul Pierce the Truth without Kobe. I mean, if people know where the nickname the Truth came from, it was from me having a really good game against Kobe Bryant and Shaq dubbing me the Truth. And so, it's very hard for me to just, like, you know, I felt like I lost a brother. You know, I felt like I lost a family member. I mean, the impact of this from a guy, and I'm not going to sit here and say I was very close to Kobe, but we had a lot of great moments together on and off the court. And, you know, he brought the very best out of me as a competitor on the court.
Look, you guys were present for some of the biggest moments in each other's lives. Yeah. That is remarkable and something, and you both understood each other in the way that, frankly, some of us lay people are never going to be able to feel that same experience. You did go up against him in multiple NBA finals. What was your relationship when you guys were younger and in the league and then through those finals and playing against each other?
I think after the two finals, like younger, we didn't have much of a relationship. I had a chance to really meet him when he first came out of high school at the Forum. He was shooting an Adidas commercial. That's where I first met him. And then, you know, as a Boston Celtic and a Laker, you know, you kind of like hated the Lakers.
Yeah.
So we didn't have much of a relationship. But as we got older, we played in two finals against each other. We ended up business partners later in our career. We grew up mutual respect for one another. Mm-hmm. So at times when I would see him off the court, we would talk hoops. We would talk business. And, you know, it just started developing in that relationship. But I'll tell you a story. And I heard Scalabrine say this the other day. We were shooting a commercial in Los Angeles at an airport hangar. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Nike guys. And, you know, we're casually, me and him are going one-on-one for the camera. Like, okay, let's guys set up, let's shoot the shot of you going one-on-one, and I'm casually dribbling, like a walk-around, shoot-around type of thing. And so I'm going through a move, and he pokes the ball away out of my hand, and I'm like, let's get this shot. You know what I mean? Kind of like. And so I get the ball again, and I do it again. He pokes it out again. I'm like, okay, hold on. And then next thing I know, we engage in the commercial in a one-on-one battle. And that's how competitive he was. It was like we supposed to, like, kind of, like,
right, you know,
dummy it up. But it just turned into a one-on-one battle with both sweating. Like a mini, like, 2-3 minute one-on-one battle in a commercial shoot. And I'll never forget that.
And I bet he could tell you afterward who won.
Yeah, he probably got me. Pretty sure he did.
That's what I always joked about those puppet commercials with LeBron and Kobe that Nike did. They had to use puppets because Kobe was so competitive. They never could have gotten that dialogue for real in a real life situation with the two of them where they were getting the best of each other. Kobe would not have stood for it.
Yeah, that was a very funny moment.
There is no way. You mentioned the finals. Look, those were some of the most memorable finals with the way that they both laid out, frankly. Tough, long series. Yeah. What sticks out to you as the battles you guys went on the court?
I mean, like I said, if there was no Kobe, there would be no Paul Pierce the Truth. I mean, like I said, I got my nickname playing against Kobe. Mm-hmm. I won a championship playing against him. He beat us in the championship, and I think that's his favorite one of all of them.
I think it is, too.
Because how it went down. I mean, we talked about this, and me, him, and Kevin talked about it at lockout meetings. Mm-hmm. We had a chance to share a lot of different moments and just to get that revenge. It
yes.
was just like he wanted that revenge so bad. Mm-hmm. It's like he worked after that season. They won the next year, but it was he. I don't know if it felt the
it
same
feel,
as beating
yes.
us.
No,
it didn't feel right beating Orlando.
I can tell you for
so
sure.
When
that
we got them
really
again,
important
it was
to him.
Like everything he ever wanted out of all the championships, and he got us, and that one hurts to today.
He told us on the podcast that was one of the hardest moments in his life, the 2008 loss to you guys.
Yeah,
was one of the
I know
hardest
he took
moments
it very
in his
hard.
Life.
I mean, yep. I yep. never seen him cry, and I saw him cry, and I was like, we got to be ready for yeah. next year because he's going to come back.
He's coming.
So, guys,
well, think about everything that had happened since Shaq left, and that was his, as he saw it, chance, right?
To yeah.
That time. So 2008 was, oh, wow, and yeah. he lost that to you guys. And I think there was a little bit of a moment of, am I ever really going to get back to holding up that golden trophy again? And, of course, then
he was determined.
Won the next two years.
He represented an entire generation on how you should really work, how competitive. I mean, there's so many great stories. It's just like, you know, I beat a guy who's arguably the greatest player in NBA history, and I matched up with him and held my own.
Right.
It was like, wow, like I said, it wouldn't be no Paul Pierce the Truth without Kobe. I mean, which way would my career turn? I mean, how motivated would I be? I mean, would I even, you know, have a championship? I mean, it's like, to do it against him, it means more than like any other team in the league, against a rival, against one of the greatest players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because of him, I'm stitched in NBA history.
I'm curious, you know, maybe the most pivotal moment of your entire career was game four of that first finals at halftime. Mm-hmm. You guys are getting drilled and you go to Doc and say, I want to guard Kobe.
Yeah.
I wonder what you remember of that moment, because you know. He might light me up.
Yeah,
it might go badly for me.
I know it could have went badly, but I was always one as a leader of the team that, like, look, I'm going to go down fighting, too. I mean, this guy's competitive.
Right.
I'm tired of seeing him shoot all these fadeaways and getting these easy buckets. At least let me see if I can slow him down. At least let me put a body on him. Let me see. And this is just the competitive gene that I had that I wanted to try to match it. I want to see where I am. If you want to be great, you have to go against the best. And that's what I wanted. And I held my own. And, you know, that, I think, was a great point in my career that said a lot about my pride. But, like, just to do it against Kobe, if you're one of the best, you want to go against the best. I mean, that's Kobe Bryant.
Right.
I want a piece of this.
Right.
Like, a lot of people don't say that. But I'm happy that he didn't have one of those epic, you know, 50-point games on me. But he had some pretty good – he had some very good shots on me. It was difficult. It was probably the most difficult matchup ever.
Well, we define Kobe a lot by his teammates. He had so many notable teammates. His teammates like you, Matt, can tell a little bit of the story and pull back the curtain on some of the mythology behind Kobe. But as a player, when you look at Kobe's rivals and Paul Pierce suddenly, certainly one of his chief
amazing
rivals through the years, what did you learn about Kobe from watching the Kobe-Paul battles?
Well, I mean, I grew up a Laker fan, you know, so I'm thinking Magic Bird, and this is our version of Magic Bird, but I'm in the NBA allowing to go against these guys, too. I mean, Paul's probably one of the most underrated players in the game. I mean, he made it look so easy, so I think that's why he gets so underrated, but he's one of the greats, too. So to be able to see, you know, Paul for Larry and Kobe mm-hmm. for Magic, and this is our, now the basketball, the NBA is better when the big city teams are relevant, you know what I mean? So it's the old Lakers-Celtics rivalry. And to be a part of that, or, you know, to be a witness to that and then know, like I said, talking on the podcast, how much that 2008 loss hurt him. He was so determined.
The next year against Orlando,
they won. But he said to get back to Boston, to beat Boston was what he had to do. And
yes.
Like I said, to be able to be a fan and watch that on both sides, it was amazing.
And that was a grueling series again in 2010. Could have gone either way.
Either way. I mean, that, like, he wanted that the most. I wanted it the most. It's just his will. I mean, he didn't have the greatest game seven, but he willed his teammates. And, you know, to do it without Shaq twice, you know, because everybody was always saying he was in Shaq's shadow. You know, where does Kobe lie amongst NBA greats? Because he has Shaq. And then to do two without Shaq was like, well, okay. He vaulted himself near Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, and in some cases, some people consider him the GOAT.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly if you talk to people around Los Angeles, and we saw his work ethic translate even out of basketball. The man had one of the greatest careers ever in sports, and then 2 years later won an Oscar. I mean, that's just
that right
incredible,
there,
right?
That motivated me as a retired really? Player now, just like, wow, he's equally as successful off the court as he was, and there's only a chosen few superstars who can match that.
Right.
Magic, Jordan, mm-hmm. and now you have Kobe.
For you, you worked with him at the Players Tribune, one of another business venture you guys were together on. What was that like seeing him again, that intensity off the court?
Oh, you know what? He captivated the room because we had these meetings with all these superstar athletes, Von Miller, Serena Williams, all in a room every summer. We would be in the summer, and every meeting would start off with Kobe talking.
Really?
You know, not the guys, not the people who are the business people invested, talking about where the company is. It was Kobe. He took the lead in all of these things, and that just shows you the just presence he had. Just like, it was just like you sat there like a little kid watching a movie, listening to Kobe talk for the next 5 minutes, and you like leaning forward, looking like, what is he saying? He's motivated, he's talking, he's intelligent. And he just captivated a room, and you couldn't wait for those little moments like that.
What do you think, and I'm curious, Matt, from a player's perspective, and Zach, you've covered so many different phases of this league, like, what do you think the NBA does going forward to honor him? I have to think the All-Star game is going to be, you know, surrounded by tributes to Kobe. Players are already wearing a black band on their uniforms for David Stern. I mean, it's kind of crazy what's happened here in the last month or so. But what do you think the NBA should do?
That's a tough call. I mean, obviously honor him. They're going to find a way to be creative and honor him in the best possible ways. But I just kind of had ideas for L.A. as far as, the L.A. Live Circle. That's where I think his statue should go, where all the fans have been the last few days and have, you know, kind of make that Kobe Bryant court or something. And then I honestly think they should retire Gigi's number in Staples Center.
I would love that.
I think that would be amazing, you know, to honor the family, to honor her, you know.
Right.
Imagine how great she would have been as Kobe as her. You know, I'd seen her play. She was on her way. So imagine what she could have done, you know, if she had the opportunity to. So those are two small things that I think would go a long way for the city of L.A. But like, to answer your question, I know the NBA is going to find something really creative and heartfelt to do because they always do.
Have there been any discussions, Zach? Have you heard about any murmurings about this yet?
I'm sure they're talking about All-Star. I mean, All-Star is going to be, I think, probably a tribute to Kobe. I would imagine that, that I haven't talked to anyone inside the league about that yet, but I'm sure they're already planning that. It's right around the corner. And, you know, we're getting back to reality in a couple of days. I mean, the Lakers are going to try to win the championship. This story is they're going to play for him. This story is never going away. And even in our lifetimes, this is going to be a before and after moment. The NBA is never going to be the same again.
No, absolutely. And I thought that when reading through that Instagram post LeBron James had yesterday where he said, this is my responsibility now. Reports from our Dave McMenamin that in the team meeting the Lakers had yesterday, he said, this is why I have broad shoulders. Like, I can take this on. I do think, Paul, that their quest to win a title this year just got so much more emotional with so much more meaning, right?
If there was any more motivation than this, this is it. LeBron, I know he feels it. I mean, he just passed Kobe Bryant on the all-time scoring list. And for something like this to tragically happen to his mentor, his brother, he's motivated. I'm telling you. The rest of the season, you're going to see a very motivated LeBron James try to bring home a trophy for the city of Los Angeles and Kobe Bryant. I will not bet against the Lakers this year. Yeah. Definitely won't.
And we talk about how it's going to affect basketball and how it's going to affect some people personally. And, Paul, for you personally, does having someone, your peer, someone you identify with so much, die so tragically, so suddenly like this, how do you think it's going to affect you, your relationships going forward?
You know, it's already affecting me. And I'm looking at my relationship with the people I have and just try to mend those and make them better. You know, I grew up without a father. You know, I haven't seen my father since I was probably like 4 years old. It just made me want to like get in contact with
him. That's real.
Like, seriously. Like, I really was like going through the internet. I'm contacting my mom. Like, and I'm looking like this, what happened to Kobe affected me that way. I want to like get to know my father now. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to have a lasting effect on me, the NBA, the world, for a very, very long time. And I don't see it ending anytime soon. Like I said, I feel like I lost a family member. And this is going to last a while.
Look, we look at pro athletes as being invincible. I think sometimes you guys feel invincible yourselves when you're out there and everything's cooking for you. And it's just such a hard and shocking reminder that, of course, nobody is. No. Absolutely. We're going to have a lot more with these guys, and we are also waiting on the Lakers to speak publicly for the first time since Sunday. As soon as they come to the podium, we will bring it to you live coverage throughout the show. Stay with us.
The Jump is brought to you by Pizza Hut. No one out pizzas the Hut.
Welcome back to The Jump. We're going to have live coverage of Lakers media availability coming up as soon as they get to the podium. And, of course, it is hard to measure how hard this has hit that team. Guys, yesterday they all got in a room, told stories about Kobe, kind of like we're all doing here. Reportedly, they saluted him with a glass of wine at the end, as is appropriate. And we've just heard that so many of these guys have been devastated, crying for a few days. So it was nice when they got to the complex today. We saw that sort of little bit of, like, emotional levity and release. LeBron, Anthony Davis joking around on the soccer field that's at that complex with some of the athletic trainers and other staff members, and just kind of having a minute to yell and scream and smile, which I don't think any of them have been able to do for 2.5 days, and then actually have a practice today. You can see them getting some shots up. So again, as soon as they are coming off the court and to the podium, we will bring that to you. In the meantime, I want to talk about two of Kobe's contemporaries posting their thoughts on Instagram last night. Here's Chris Paul. The love you had for the game was nowhere near the love you had for your girls, all five of them. And Gigi, who we had already prearranged her marriage with little Chris, is as beautiful and feisty as she could ever be. As I've watched you in retirement, as happy as you have ever been, I've sat back and prayed and hoped that my baby girl will look at me the way Gigi looks at you. I love you. I will miss you with all my heart, my brother. All love to Vanessa and all the families during this time. Carmelo Anthony also posting a Kobe tribute of his own, saying, quote, "There are moments in life when there are simply no words to describe the pain within. This is one of them. You will continue to be loved. You will be missed. You will be forever remembered. Your legacy will live on forever. Our friendship will not be forgotten. I know you will be near, even if I don't see you. Peace, King. There are no goodbyes. Wherever you'll be in our hearts." It is emotional to read that. I kind of can't believe that what is going to be ending up the first game the Lakers play will be LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony going against each other, because the Blazers will be playing the Lakers on ESPN here on Friday night. I want to get back to Chris Paul just for 1 second. You saw Chris since this happened.
Yeah.
How shaken is he?
He was, you know, our boys go to school together. So I did some stuff for ESPN and I was running late. So they went to his house and I was waiting outside for him. And all of a sudden, like, a black Range Rover comes out and it's staring at me. I'm like, who's this? And then he rolls down the window and it's Chris. And he's just teary-eyed, man. You know, Chris is a very emotional, wears heart on the sleeve type guy. You know, so we had a moment and we discussed, and we're just in disbelief, you know what I mean? And he said he took some extra time. Just he came home for his daughter's recital, and he said that the accident happened right down the street from where the recital was, and he just was crushed. And he took some extra time with the family, and I think he said he's going to meet his team in Sacramento either tonight or tomorrow or something. So,
well, it's that urgent, Zach. You talked about it. You were on a plane when you heard about it, and you wanted the plane to turn around so you could go hug your daughter.
Yeah, right? I'm going home tomorrow. I can't wait to go home. It is disorienting. You know, I was talking to an agent just a couple of hours ago, and he was saying that, you know, it was disorienting for him too. He wanted to be with his kids. It's like you said, it's just strange how these things make you feel.
Yeah.
It's so personal. I know you immediately rushed to be with your kids too. If you're a player, then you had to turn around and play in this game on Friday. If you are LeBron James, with, as he said, all of this now on his shoulder, the personal just trauma of having a friend die. But I mean, also, by the way, Kobe and LeBron spoke twice in the 12 hours before Kobe died.
Yeah.
But then also, as he says, I'm putting on my shoulders the responsibility for this team. How do you narrow your mind to go into basketball games?
You know, I really don't know. A few years ago, when I played in Washington, I lost my best friend, and I got the call in the middle of the night. And I went out there, and I played the first 3 minutes, and I couldn't play. I mean, I literally told the coach, take me out, I couldn't play. It was that hard. I mean, that's the feeling I have.
Like, was it just because your brain couldn't focus in on basketball?
I couldn't focus on basketball, because you understand there's more to – life.
Right.
I mean, there's more to life, and I couldn't, like, focus on, like, back cuts or plays. I'm thinking about, I lost a brother, I lost my best friend. I couldn't I couldn't process it.
Right.
And I tried, and you know, you try to go out there and do things to get your mind off, but it, in the moment, it was tough for me to handle, and I had to take some days off.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, and I think that, you know, from afar, fans see us and think, okay, you get paid a bunch of money, you should be invincible, not knowing that we're humans just like everyone else. So we lose friends, we lose moms, we lose Kobe, we lose, you know, we lose a lot of different people. And although we're going through these same battles and up and down emotions, we still have, we're paid to go out there and perform for 2.5 hours, no matter what the circumstances are. Right. And it just shows that, you know, there's stuff that's bigger than basketball. And obviously life is more precious than basketball. So, you know, hats off to everyone who's going out there and playing in his honor now. But, you know, like we mentioned, it's definitely got to be tough. I mean, when you're in the moment, you're in the moment. But the second a foul is called, the second you're subbed out, the second the game stops, you go right back to what is hurting the most. And obviously that's what Kobe and Gigi left that void.
Zach, there was some surprise when the Lakers-Clippers game that was scheduled for last night did get postponed, just because it's happened so rarely in NBA history. The Kennedy assassination stopped games. And then there were a couple sporadic stops. There was a brief stop for 9/11. There was a stop in one or two cities for very tragic events that happened there. But it's extremely rare. We're talking in the last 60 years. Do you get the impression that they could have played a game, or that it was close, or that it was just like, this cannot happen?
I don't know ever how close it was, but I defer to the players. I mean, if they don't want to play, if the organizations aren't ready to play, if the Lakers aren't ready, then you just, you know, they are in the same city. In theory, you could reschedule this game, although Staples Center is pretty booked up. But you just some things come second now, you know.
Go borrow the forum, man. I mean,
there are other ways to do it.
We see Rob Pelinka there on the screen. I'm not sure if we're going to hear from him today or not. Of course, remember, Rob Pelinka was Kobe Bryant's agent for two decades, right? Well, he was the godfather, I believe, of Gigi and at least maybe one of the other kids in that family. He is so close to them. And, of course, we're seeing the players there as well. We've heard I don't know how to phrase this. Vanessa Bryant has updated her Instagram, and I want to share that with you right now. The photo there is a picture of Kobe and his daughter. So we have not gotten official comments from her, but obviously it's unspeakable to think about what she must be feeling.
I can't even imagine.
I know all of us up here have children. The death of a child is something no parent should ever have to deal with, and then, of course, to lose her husband too. You know Vanessa, yeah. and just is,
it's hard. I mean, you got to think, you know, Natalia being on her way to college,
yes.
And the two younger girls are never going to really get to know how amazing of a man their father was. You know, obviously Bianca being four and Capri being 7 or 8 months, yeah. I have a 1-year-old, so they kind of don't really have a grasp on life yet. So they lost a father, you know, she lost a husband, you know, his mom and dad lost a son, his sisters lost a brother. Like, it hits us heavy, but we can't imagine what it's doing to the actual family. So it's, you know, they stay in our prayers and our thoughts, and we just wish them nothing but the best.
It's the thing to always remember that these are real people with real families, and in the end, we are all very sad to lose Kobe as a public figure and as a friend, but losing your father, your son, your brother, your husband like that, that is the tragedy. We will be on Friday when the Lakers and Blazers play that first game on the scene at the Staples Center. We're going to have a special 2-hour edition on The Jump. That will be LA Live Plaza. We have so many guests planned. We are going to do it right for Kobe Bryant as we prepare for Lakers Blazers later that night on ESPN. Coming up, Kobe, one of the legendary figures in American sports. And we will be talking more about him and hearing from the Lakers players as well. Welcome back to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols alongside Paul Pierce, Zach Lowe, Matt Barnes. And guys, we're watching live Lakers practice. At some point, this is going to break up, and we are going to at least hear from Coach Frank Vogel. I'm not sure if we're going to hear from players because they're so emotional today. They've got Kobe's retired numbers on the wall up there. They are literally playing under his shadow. And a coach in this position, it's so hard, especially for Frank Vogel, who it's not like he's been an L.A. fixture for years or anything like that. First-year coach with this team. Matt, you went through the Donald Sterling with the Clippers situation, what I'm going to call it. And in that moment, Doc Rivers was so key for you guys, right?
Doc was a huge shield, and just allowed us to kind of focus on what we needed to focus on. You know, he deterred all questions to him, and then once the situation had died down, we all individually spoke on it. But, you know, in this Volga situation, there's nothing he can really say or do. You know, I think these guys know what they need to do. They have a tremendous leader in LeBron and Anthony Davis, and it goes on down the line. They have a really veteran team that have been through some wars on their other team. So these guys know how important this Laker across their chest is, and then also carrying on Kobe's legacy. Like Paul said, there's no more motivation now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be tough, but Friday they're going to come out and play in his honor for the rest of the season, obviously. And I think, like Paul said, they're going to be scary the rest of the way. I had the Clippers early in the season, and I still like them, but, you know, just me being a lifetime Laker fan and understanding the moment now, you know, I really want to see this get done this year for the Lakers.
That's a tricky thing, by the way. I lived in New York, Zach, you did too, after the aftermath of September 11th, and I covered that Yankees team all through their postseason run that year, and it was super emotional for everyone in that clubhouse. Obviously, very emotional scenes on the field, but I can tell you also off the field, they wanted more than anything to win that world championship for New York City. They didn't eventually. Arizona won it. And it is a heavy burden for a team to be carrying. It is a lot. Mm-hmm. And in the end, sometimes it is about baseball or basketball. Where does the ball go? And that's what decides it. You can't just, you know, as much as you would like to think, you can control everything that happens. You've also had coaches. I thought what Matt said was so good about it. He can be a shield. And Doc Rivers was a shield for you during the Sterling affair. How can coaches help players out? And again, we thought we'd hear from all the players today. Yeah. Now it's sounding like maybe Frank Vogel is going to speak for them. And again, we'll wait and see. But how can a coach kind of help players in that situation?
Well, this is unprecedented. I mean, this situation for Frank Vogel to be in. And so, you know, the only thing he can do is just go out there. He has to give his condolences to the families, to the other people who are involved in the crash with Kobe. He has to some way find a way to get his team back mentally right. You know, that's going to be the hardest part, I believe. And I know that we won't have to worry about LeBron or maybe Anthony Davis, but the rest of the guys who are taking it hard, you know, because when you're a Laker, Kobe Bryant is your family.
Yeah.
You know, he's your brother. I mean, he's your mentor, you know, and a lot of these guys look to him. So this is a situation where he's going to come in and do his best, and whatever he says, he's going to come off positive. And, you know, we take it and we try to move on as a team to start playing basketball and do it for Kobe.
I mean, look, this is so deeply personal to so many people in the Lakers franchise. We've talked about the relationship LeBron had with him, so many other players. Rob Pelinka, as I mentioned, general manager, now executive vice president of the team, was Kobe's agent for 20 years. Godfather to a couple of his children.
That's his best friend.
We know about owner Jeannie Buss as well, right? Obviously, for her, the way Magic Johnson was for her father, Kobe was for Jeannie. And it's such an intense personal relationship. In some ways, Frank Vogel might be the right person, right, to come out and be the shield, as you put it, Matt, because, of course, Frank is a very caring guy, very deeply affected the way all of us are, but a little bit different when you are, this is your first year in Los Angeles. And he's a consensus builder, right, Zach? That's his MO.
I was going to say, if Frank is maybe his best skill as a coach is his ability to read the room and read people and understand how to make people comfortable. And the other thing is he's completely selfless. He's he's not looking for credit. He's not looking to be in the spotlight. Whatever he senses he needs to do in this situation, he'll do. He's a selfless person and very good at reading the room.
Mm-hmm. And a father himself, so a lot of empathy there as well. In terms of the rest of the Lakers organization and how they go forward in this, you mentioned, hey, LeBron and AD, I'm not worried about them. I kind of feel like we shouldn't tell anyone they don't have to be. They have room to feel everything.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And I think that for those, you're right though about their mental toughness and strength and their veteranness. When we think about the kids in the organization, right, the younger players, and then even just the training staff and all the people that make up a basketball team, I know behind the scenes fans don't always see everything that goes into an organization, but the closeness is still there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had Judy, who was Kobe's personal therapist, and then when I tore my knee in 2010, he sent me to her, and now she works with the Lakers, and she was one of the first people to hit me because she knew how close we were, but like I said, she was the best, and she was Kobe's right hand. Wherever he went, off-season, whatever, Judy was there. So, like you said, it's a very close-knit family with a lot of moving parts, and you just can't imagine how everyone is really feeling. It's just, it's a devastating loss for everybody.
Judy spoke at the luncheon I mentioned yesterday.
Did she?
Yeah, because, again, as you say, we think of the people who are, quote, close to Kobe, people in the public eye, right? But as you know,
she was the one that made him go. He was, right? She was the reason why he played.
Like Penn Berthy? I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
The people who are involved. LA Times reporting that the Lakers gave the players the option to speak today. We, so far, are waiting to hear what happens. We've been talking about Frank Vogel because he is expected to get to the podium any minute now. When you sit there and watch these players post on Instagram, when they come to the podium, whenever it is, today we'll hear from some people, when we hear from some people in the next 2 days, how do you know what to say? How do you sum it up into, you know, a paragraph or whatever it is?
You know, a lot of people are just left speechless and can't really put it into words. I mean, I know I haven't been able to really express it, you know, completely. I mean, just like everybody, we're at a loss for words. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're still in disbelief to this day. You don't want to believe it. You know, I on my way here today, I looked up. It was such a beautiful day, and I tweeted, you know, there's no clouds. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day in California, but yet it still seems like a black cloud. And that's just the feeling we all have, and you just really can't put it into words.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, to each his own, it's tough, you know, because I think certain people are expected to make, you know,
LeBron's
supposed to. Some of these guys are supposed to make it, and it's hard to internalize and know what to say. You know, I was at a loss for words for, you know, since it happened. And this morning, I put something out on my Instagram. Then after that, everything just started flowing. You know what I mean? I started posting pictures of him and the boys and their workouts back in the day and he and I friendship. So it just, everyone handles it different and it comes out different. And I think people have to understand and respect that, you know, these people that everyone's waiting on to hear, Genie and all these other, like, you just have to understand because you don't understand how deep the connection was and how it hit them. So whenever that time may be, you have to respect that time.
Some people like to tell stories.
Right.
Some people, it makes them feel better. They think the audience, all the millions of fans, want to hear stories, and that they're comfortable in that. And some people aren't comfortable, and some people don't get, it doesn't make them feel better. And everyone should be able to make whatever choice they want.
Yeah, I know that there is also within the organization such a desire to get it right. To do it right. And that is part of what was a big deal about when were they going to play this first game, because they knew when they play that first game, now it's going to be Friday, all eyes are on them. What will they do for Kobe? How can they do it right? And I think that that's part of what we've been seeing with them slow playing some of this, is just emotion of, oh my God, I can't even fathom this.
I will say this about the players, because most often, and Matt can attest to this, that players use the game of basketball as their sanctuary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because through my darkest times, I would go to the gym. And for that 2.5 hours, 3 hours, I wouldn't think about that. Mm-hmm. You know, the year I was stabbed, I played all 82 games because I needed to be out there.
Yeah.
To not, the problem is when they're off the court.
Right.
When
idle
you're off
time,
the court, when
line.
You're just sitting there, that's when you're going to feel the emotions. But I don't worry about the players when they're on the court or in practice. The Lakers need this right now to be on the court, just to just feel free and just their sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Once they get off the court, they grieve or they have their feelings. That's where they have the issues. But on the court, they have, I honestly, and I'll tell you, I believe every player can say this.
I agree.
There will be no problem on the court.
It's and, a sense
and you need it.
Right? Too? Like,
it's our outlet, like you said. It's
an outlet.
It's our escape.
Absolutely. It's our escape.
2.5 hours nothing in the world matters but what we're doing.
Right now. This is my happiness. This is my joy. This is what I was born to do. This is why I play. For this 2.5 hours out of this 24-hour day, this moment, I can smile and be happy.
And honor him.
Yeah.
And honor him.
And honor him. People don't sometimes realize how structured professional athletes' lives are, too. Right?
Routine.
You do this at this time. You do this at that time. You do this at practice. You do this at weights. You do this at meetings. And there's been no structure the past few days. So I imagine for the guys we're seeing in these live shots on the court, just getting back to the structure has been helpful, too. We are anticipating hearing from them just moments from now. We've been told 2 or 5 minutes for 2 or 5 minutes. So should be right after this break. And you can see the memorial that is still growing outside the Staples Center. Our ESPN studios are right here as well. It is tremendous tribute to a tremendous man. Welcome back to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols alongside Paul Pierce, Zach Lowe, Matt Barnes. We are waiting for Lakers media availability that is scheduled to start any minute. I do want to talk a little bit about what we heard last night on TNT. Such a touching and well-done tribute from some of the people who knew Kobe best, including, of course, Shaquille O'Neal, and then walked out onto the plaza here at Staples Center. Take a listen.
Go
That's awesome.
The bravery of everyone within about 2 feet of him, because I've been around Shaq when he starts to jump around. He did it.
You notice how quickly everyone got quiet?
Shaq tells you to get quiet. You get quiet. Right. But a little bit of that is kind of like the little clip of we saw them playing soccer earlier. When you are in these just mountains of days of tremendous grief, just being able to yell and sort of move your body around, it is something that everyone needs. Shaq posted to Instagram earlier today. He's going to be donating all the proceeds from his upcoming Super Bowl event in Miami this weekend to all the families who lost loved ones and to the Kobe and Vanessa Foundation. Paul, how do you think Shaq and Kobe as a duo will be remembered?
You know, this was arguably the greatest duo.
Tell me who else is in the argument. I mean, seriously.
Like, you know, you want to say Pippen and Jordan, but when you rank these two all time,
right,
they're both going to be top 10. Mm-hmm. So there's no other duo that you have two. Well, they're arguably Kareem and Magic.
Kareem and Magic, that's the closest thing.
And it's a toss-up.
For me, it's just position-wise, right? Kareem and Magic and Shaq and Kobe both have that combination of positions, combination of skill sets. Pippen and Jordan, to me, overlapped more than those guys overlap with each other, which give you sort of that fuller picture. Is that fair? Or?
I mean, I think they're the greatest duo. You know, we discussed on the podcast, and Kobe said, you know, outside of the Spurs, who knows how many championships that, you know, they could have possibly won 10 in a row. But as far as two players, like you said, one being a guard, one being a big, primarily when that's what the league was all about, they have the two best at it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's there's a few other duos you could put in there. But to me, Kobe and Shaq were definitely the best duo ever to play.
All right. Frank Vogel, indeed, walking to the podium now. Let's hear what he has to say. Oh, he's walking. Apparently, my producers in the control room say he's walking. So that's what we're going to watch right there, walking with Allison Bogley, longtime Lakers media relations, having to deal with this, by the way. I want to shout out to her because having to deal with this is as hard as anyone. She worked alongside Kobe for years. Mm-hmm. And then again, to have to go do your job. Can you imagine the media requests and everything that this team has had to deal with? And she has been front and center, so I want to shout her out as well. Zach, what's your feeling on Shaq and Kobe as we wait for Frank Vogel to continue walking?
You know, I was rewatching some of the 2001 playoffs when they went 15-1 and just destroyed everybody. And there was always this obsession about who's number one and who's number two. And while Shaq was a three-time Finals MVP, so Kobe was number two, like we were talking about. In that playoffs, that was as perfect as it could ever be. Mm-hmm. Between it, that was one and one just a little below. It was perfect.
Let's hear from Frank.
Personally, and on behalf of the Lakers family, offering condolences. Offering condolences to Vanessa Bryant and the entire Bryant family on the loss of Kobe and Gianna. And we are all deeply, deeply saddened by this unthinkable tragedy. And our thoughts and prayers are with you. I also want to offer condolences to the families of the other victims that were lost in this tragedy. Our thoughts and prayers are with you as well. And with that, I'll open up for questions.
Coach, how emotional has this been for you and your family at home and your Laker family here?
Extremely emotional on both fronts. You know, it's been something that has touched my family, being the father of daughters. It's been very emotional and, you know, something that brings us together. And then as well as the Lakers family. You know, I'm around. The people that were closest to Kobe, you know, throughout his time here, and you know, it's been a deeply saddening time for all of us.
Frank, can you describe how you broke the news to the team on the plane, and kind of what the sentiment of that moment was like?
You know, for me, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew, and you know, some of them had heard, you know, I've seen the reports. Some had not. So it was just a daunting task of just grabbing each guy one-on-one and letting them know.
Obviously, the NBA canceled that game Tuesday. How do you know when this team can be ready? And you said it's pulled you together. How do you guard against it breaking you apart and losing focus?
I don't think it could break us apart in any way. Yeah, I mean, it's just a feel thing. You know, you observe those around you. You observe your own feelings and emotions. And, you know, you proceed at the right pace at the right time.
Frank, has there been talk about playing this season for Kobe, that sort of thing?
You know, we want to represent what Kobe was about. you know, more than anything. We've always wanted to make him proud, and you know, that's not going to be any different here.
Frank, what was the what did you guys get done yesterday, and what do you think? What kind of work did that do for those guys emotionally?
We did some things that we felt would be therapeutically beneficial. We got in the gym for some team shooting work. No real practice working on anything in particular. I wanted our guys to come in mentally free, but to get a sweat, touch the ball, to be around each other. And then we had a lunch, you know, where we all, you know, just spent time together and grieved together.
Coach, speaking on behalf of the Lakers, if you had a chance, what would you tell Kobe Bryant?
You know, I'm not ready to go there. You know, I really not. You know, some questions I'm just not going to be able to answer right now.
Frank, you can maybe tell us perhaps a favorite Kobe story over the years?
No, I'm not ready to go there either.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
What have you learned about this team through these last few days and through this tragedy?
Well, it's just strengthened what we've felt all year about our current group, which is, you know, we've become a family in a very short time. And, you know, it's something you talk about in the NBA with your teams. But this group in particular has really grown to love each other very rapidly. And, you know, we understand the importance and the opportunity we have this year. And, you know, this has just brought us closer together.
You speak of being a father to...
Sorry, go ahead.
You speak of being a father to daughters, knowing how much he loved his daughters and supported women's sports and all beyond. What did that mean to you?
I mean, it's just you connect with that, you know, and you feel it, you know, because it's what your life is about. Him being a father to daughters and being involved in their sports was, you know, the most enjoyable thing, you know, in his life, you know, from my observations. And it's the most enjoyable thing in my life. I love being the coach of the Lakers, but it doesn't come close to comparing to my family time. And, you know, so it's very relatable.
Frank, how have the leaders of your team, LeBron and Anthony, how have they tackled the task of leading this group going forward?
Really the same way they have throughout the year. You know, we've collaborated with them on... you know, what the next few days should look like. You know, they've been vocal in terms of, you know, just helping the group manage their emotions and get through this.
What did you do after you left the plane on Sunday afternoon?
I went home and hugged my family.
Frank, obviously it's tough to kind of do this with us and answer questions about the last couple of days. Is there sort of discussion with players about you kind of taking this on for them today, or what was the decision process for them?
The decision process is you guys can speak when you're ready and not before.
Last two questions.
Frank, would you say, Frank,
you've been in the NBA for 20 years, most of Kobe's career. Just wondered what impact you saw on the other players that you coached for, against, trying to prepare a scouting report, you know, to deal with him, all that stuff.
Well, he was the most feared man in the league for an entire generation. And, you know, the influence is profound, league-wide, basketball community-wide, worldwide, Lakers family, you know, wide. And, you know, his influence will be felt forever.
Frank, would you say it's fair to say, in addition to wanting to win it for yourselves, you guys now want to win the championship for Kobe? Would that be fair?
We want to represent what he stood for. You know, that's the most important thing for us. We want to represent what he stood for.
Frank, what can Friday's game do for your team, a team full of basketball players, to play a game?
I think it's therapeutic. You know, anytime you can get out and take your mind off of something like this, there's no doubt it will be therapeutic. You know, and just help with the process of us moving forward.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Too? Last question, Allie. Go ahead.
Sorry. Has that been the case in practice, too, that sort of therapeutic?
Absolutely. Everything we've done in terms of being together has been therapeutic. Yep.
Thank you. Thanks, Frank.
Man, I admire Frank Vogel before today and certainly after that. I thought a couple interesting things he said. First of all, just having to break the news to the entire team on the plane. When you hear that, it's just, it hurts.
I didn't think about that. That's tough.
Right?
That is.
That's a lot. I also thought it was interesting, someone asking him toward the end about whether they were going to now win this title for Kobe, what we were just talking about on the air, and I thought his answer was very smart. Because, again, right, if you say, yes, we're going to do that, which I'm sure is what they want to say, mm-hmm, it's what is in their hearts, and then you can't control everything in life. And if you don't end up winning, it's that you failed him. So his quote at the beginning of the presser was, we want to represent what Kobe was about. He said again at the end, we want to represent what he stood for. And I think that that's a great way for them to approach it. So for them, he also was talking about that they have become a family in a very short time. And that's really struck me as I've watched the team through this season. And it actually reminds me a little bit of your 2008 team, because Anthony Davis comes in, you have a wholesale change of players, free agents, mm-hmm, you have guys who went out in that trade and everything. And I have seen, and we've talked about the comparisons between the Clippers chemistry and the Lakers chemistry, this Lakers team, they have so much fun together. You can see it in the locker room. What did you guys do in Boston that reminds you of the way that these Lakers are and might be able to band together, as Frank just said, in this unspeakable
We had a lot of great moments off the court. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, a lot of great dinners. A lot of times we get to the hotel, maybe a player rent a suite. We all get together, have food, play some pool. It was a lot of things that we did off the court. As you saw earlier in the show, you saw the Lakers out on the field, kicking the soccer ball. You know, we had softball games. I mean, we did a number of things just to kind of keep that closeness, that family feel, that together, that brotherly feel. And it just wasn't about just basketball all the time, because we spent a lot of time together off the court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's how, I mean, to me, those are the best teams. That's how you become family. That's how you become brother. That's when you're going to run through a wall for your brother, mm-hmm, instead of just your teammate. And I actually got a chance to catch this team in Brooklyn the other night, and I was talking to Boogie before the game, and they move as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
Dinner, lounges,
absolutely,
movies,
right,
they're all together. You know what I mean? And you see the enthusiasm and the youthfulness. And like I said, because some of these guys have been through the war, they know what it takes, and they're rallying these guys together. Guys like Dwight Howard, who are having, you know, career-saving years. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of key pieces, a really big team and a special team. And like I said, they want to represent Kobe the right way in all aspects, but their goal is to win a championship.
Danny Green told me on my podcast it's the most fun team he's ever played on.
I thought that statement was amazing. When you think about, he was on Toronto, won the championship last year, those Spurs teams that won the title.
And the Spurs teams are big dinner. The Spurs are big dinner, go out
teams. They're a different vibe. We asked players, we knew the Spurs were more of like a wine. Like, Paul and them turned up, we turned like
yeah.
that's no discrediting the Spurs. It's a different kind of fun.
Right, different kind.
Absolutely. And again, when terrible tragedy strikes, if you have that base, if you do feel like family with the guys with you, if it's been off the court and not just the stuff on the court, what Frank said, that you can go through this together, and he said, this could not break us apart in any way. I buy all of that, and it is tremendous to see him take on the burden of speaking for everyone today. That is no small thing. No. We will be back right after this break. We'll talk a little bit more about what's happening for the Lakers going forward, and also a quick welcome back to Victor Oladipo, who is coming back tonight from a very long injury. Well, stick with us. The NBA on ESPN continues tonight. Kyrie and the Nets hosting Andre Drummond and the Pistons, 7:30 Eastern. And then James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and the Rockets taking on red-hot Damian Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers. Coverage starts with Stephen A's pregame Sports Center at 7 o'clock. And on Saturday, we have an ABC primetime matchup with a big Eastern Conference battle. Paul, you know all about what happens when the Sixers and Celtics get together.
Fireworks.
Our coverage begins with this man, Paul Pierce, on the jump. We are your pregame show on ESPN app and, of course, on ABC at 8 o'clock Eastern. Again, I just want to commend everyone in the Lakers organization, because I know how hard today was, and it is the first step of getting back. And at some point, I don't think we're ever going to feel the same. I think what you guys say about the NBA just is changed. But we will get back to doing the thing that Kobe Bryant loved the most, which was playing basketball. Mm-hmm. So in that spirit, I want to welcome back somebody who we've been missing from this game. And I think it's important to mention,
On this show, we have long awaited the return of one of the bright souls in the NBA, Victor Oladipo. He will play tonight as the Pacers host the Bulls. It's been 1 year and 6 days since he suffered that ruptured quad tendon. Pacers only 3 games out of the 2 seed, people. Wow. And they hope this is going to be a huge boost in the second half of the season. Oladipo, a 2-time All-Star. He was in his last full season, was third-team All-NBA. And I just, you guys know Victor. He is one of the sort of good humans in this league. And honestly, on it for the last couple of days, I need some good human time. So I'm really, really pleased he's coming back. What do you expect from him?
Well, I don't have very large expectations. When you sit out a year not playing NBA basketball, it's going to take some time. I mean, we've seen guys come back and it took a whole year to get back to where they were. Mm-hmm. But what he will give them is a presence, a guy who can go out there and hit big shots late in the game, a guy who could create a basket. Do I expect him to be in his 20-point, 25-point scoring ways? Probably not right away, but he gives them another presence, especially at the end of ball games.
I think Paul hit it on the head. People have to realize, I mean, the extended time he's out. So he's not even in preseason form. And guys are in midseason form going into All-Star break. So there's a big difference between the conditioning of your body, your mental approach, and just how your game is flowing at this point of the season. Excited to have him back. I think obviously just his presence alone is going to bring energy and his smarts and helping those guys on the floor. But it's going to take him a little while to, you know, to get back to the guy that, you know, made him a 2-time All-Star.
The peak version of him really centers the team. Sure. Everyone goes into the role that they should be in, and the Pacers being 30-17 without him is one of the very best stories in the entire league this year. They have had a fantastic season. Now they have some big decisions to make about who starts, who gets squeezed out of the bench rotation and all that, but the version of him that's an All-Star really puts this team together.
All right, well, given, though, that, as these two guys say, we don't necessarily, it would be too much to expect of him to be in All-Star form right away.
No.
So how
Agreed.
Does he him coming back, what ceiling would you put on the Pacers, given that you're going to get moderate Victor Oladipo?
Everything in the East depends on what seed you get. Like, would you rather be the 6th seed or the 4th seed? Would you rather be seeded lower and be out of Milwaukee's bracket, or would you rather be seeded higher? All these teams from 2 to 6, they could all beat each other. No one is standing out right now.
I mean, look, the East is more interesting than people gave it credit for going into the season. The Pacers are one of those teams. Of course, the Celtics, one of those teams, the Heat.
Just before we get out, I thought I wanted Paul to mention, he had a great idea while we were talking off camera about what Staples Center should do.
That's what they should do for Kobe.
Which?
Change the Staples Center name, Kobe Bryant Stadium.
I agree.
Well,
100%.
We'll have to ask.
That's a good move right there.
Irving Azoff owns the Staples Center.
I mean, you can say Kobe Bryant Center by Staples.
The Bryant Center.
He built it.
Right? He certainly did. I've seen people float that in the All-Star game, one team should all wear number 8 and one team should wear number 24.
This is a lasting memory. When you come downtown and you see the Bryant Center, that should be it for
there you go. We're going to start some lobbying. Thank you guys for joining us, and these guys as well.